Chapter 36. When he got back to the carriage house, Webb called Bates at home, waking him up, and told him about his violent encounter with Big F. He also told him about his meeting with Cove. He rendezvoused with Bates and a team of agents at the courtyard in Southeast D.C. an hour later. The sun was just starting its rise, and Webb could only shake his head. He hadn't even been to sleep yet, and it was time to start a new workday. Bates gave him another phone to replace the one Westbrook's guy had smashed. Same phone number, so that was convenient. Webb thanked Bates, who didn't comment on the fresh injuries to Webb's face, though Bates clearly was not in a good mood.
"You keep going through government equipment like that, it's coming out of your damn paycheck. And I left you messages on your old phone that you never returned."
"Well, damn, Purse. I get voicemail messages popping up on my screen sometimes a day after I get them."
"I never had a problem."
"Well, that really helps me, doesn't it?" They had left one agent to watch their cars. In this neighborhood, nothing was safe or sacred, least of all Uncle Sam's property. In fact, some enterprising young fellows would like nothing better than to chop shop a Buick car and make a tidy profit in the bargain. As they walked, Bates's temper seemed to grow.
"You're lucky you're alive, Webb," he snapped,
not seeming happy at all that Webb had been so lucky.
"That's what you get for going off on your own. I can't believe you went into that with no backup. You disobeyed my orders. I could have your ass, all of it."
"But you won't, because I'm giving you what you need, a break." Bates finally calmed down and shook his head.
"Did he really blow the guy away right in front of you for being a snitch?"
"That's not something one tends to get wrong."
"Jesus, the balls the guy must have."
"Bowling balls if they fit the rest of him." They all went inside the Target building and down to the basement level. It was dark and damp, and it stank. Going from a stone mansion in Virginia horse country to a dungeon in Anacostia made Webb want to laugh. Yet he really had to concede that he was more of a dungeon guy.
"Tunnels, the man said," commented Bates, looking around.
There were no working lights down here, so each agent had brought a searchlight.
"See, the thing is, we checked for things like that, Webb."
"Well, we need to check again, because he seemed to know what he was talking about. And there's really no other way those guns could have been brought in with no one seeing anything." "Don't they have plans down at the Department of Public Works that would show the location of the tunnels?"
"This is D.C., okay? If you want to go and try and find anything at a city agency, be my guest. Stuff from yesterday is hard enough to track down, much less from half a century ago."
They searched everywhere until Webb came to a large collection of 50-gallon oil drums in a far corner. They were 10 abreast and 10 deep. "What's with all this?"
"Furnace system was oil-based. Supply just got left when the place was shut down. Too costly to move it."
"Anybody check under them?" In answer, one of the agents went over to the pile and pushed against one of the drums. It didn't budge. "Nothing's under here, Webb. You wouldn't park a million tons of oil on top of a tunnel you had to get in and out of." "Is that right?" Webb eyed the drum the man had tried to move. He put his foot against it, and it was indeed full. Webb pushed the one next to it, and the one next to that. Then he pushed against drums in the second row, all full.
"Okay, are you convinced?" asked Bates.
"Humor me." As Bates and the other agents watched, Webb climbed on top of the drums and started stepping from one to another. With each one, he would stop and rock his weight back and forth. When he reached the middle of the cluster of oil drums, he rocked on top of one can and almost fell over. "This one's empty." He stepped over to the drum next to it. "This one, too." He marched out a 4-drum by 4-drum grid. "These are all empty. Give me a hand." The other agents scampered up to help, and very quickly they had cleared away the empty drums, and their lights shone on a door in the floor. Bates stared at it and then looked at Webb.
Son of a bitch. How'd you figure that one out?
I did a case when I worked in the Kansas City field office. Guy scammed a bunch of bankers by filling up a warehouse with drums that were supposed to contain heating oil the guy was using for collateral for this huge loan. The bankers sent their inspectors out, and sure enough, they opened a few drums and they were all filled with heating oil, but they only checked the front fringes because guys in suits don't like to climb over dirty oil drums. Turns out 90% of the drums were empty. I know because I checked every damn one after we were called in when the guy skipped town. Bates looked chagrined.
I owe you one, Webb.
And believe me, I'll hold you to that.
Guns drawn, they opened the door, climbed down into the tunnel, and followed its straight and then sharply angled path.
Webb flashed his light on the floor. Somebody's been through here recently. Look at all those tracks.
The tunnel ended in a stairwell. They headed quietly up, every man alert and ready to fire. They eased the unlocked door open and found themselves in another building, much like the one they had just left. The area they were in had a lot of abandoned property. They moved stealthily upstairs. The room they found there was large and empty. They moved back downstairs, exited the building, and looked around.
I figure we went west about 2 blocks, said one of the agents, and Webb agreed with that.
They all looked at the building where the tunnel had led. Faded lettering on one wall identified it as once having been a food distribution company, and it came complete with a loading dock where trucks could deliver bananas or machine guns. At the loading dock were a couple of abandoned trucks, tires gone, doors missing.
In the middle of the night, you pull up with a truck and squeeze it right between these two, offload your crates, take them through the tunnel, and that's it, said Webb. His gaze swept the area. And there are no residences around here, no one to see anything. That's probably why they used it.
Okay, but we got Big F on Murder One. With your testimony, he goes away forever.
You have to find him first, and from what I've seen, he's pretty good at what he does.
We're going to need to put you in protective custody.
No, you don't. I'm good on that.
What the hell do you mean you're good on that? This guy has every incentive to blow you away.
If he had wanted to do that, he would have done it last night. I was just a tad helpless then. Besides, I've got a job to do. Protect Billy and Gwen Canfield, and I'm going to finish that job.
That's what I don't get. He murders a guy right in front of you and lets you walk.
So I could deliver the message about the tunnels.
What, he's never heard of a damn phone? I'm not kidding, Webb. I want you in protection.
You said you owed me. I'm calling in my chit.
What the hell is more important than staying alive?
I don't know, Purse. In my line of work, I've never really thought about it very much. And I'm not going in.
I'm your superior. I can make you.
Yeah, I guess you can, said Webb, looking at the man evenly.
Oh, shit. You're more trouble than you're worth, London.
Figured you learned that a long time ago.
Bates looked around the loading dock.
The thing is, there's nothing tying the freeze to this warehouse or those guns. Without something to go on, we can't hit them. Right now, they're being little angels, giving us no excuse to pay a visit.
Nothing has turned up with the killings in Richmond to connect them to the freeze? That's a lot of tracks to cover.
From the angle of the shot on Judge Ledbetter, we traced it to a building across the street that's under construction. Hundreds of people work there all the time, laborers who come and go.
What about the phone call he got?
Payphone in Southside Richmond, no trace.
But the judge was downtown, so at least 2 people were involved, and they had communication links, so the timing of the call was right.
That's right. I never thought we were dealing with amateurs here.
What about Watkins and Wingo?
All the people in Wingo's office have been checked out.
Cleaning people? One of them could have applied the atropine to the phone receiver.
Again, we checked. Those people come and go, but we found no leads.
Watkins?
Gas leak. It was an old house.
Come on, he gets a phone call right as he walks in. Again, it's split-second timing. And by somebody who knew all three men's routines. And he just happened to have a solenoid in his phone that would make the spark necessary to blow him to heaven?
I know, Webb, but these guys also had lots of other people with incentives to kill them. One or two of the murders might be related, but maybe all of them aren't. At least right now, all we have to link them are the phones and the Ernest Free case.
They're connected, Purse, trust me.
Right, but we have to convince a jury, and that's getting almost impossible to do these days.
Anything on the bomb out at East Winds?
Very sophisticated C4 device. We've checked the backgrounds of all the people working out there. Most of the farmhands came with Straight when the place they were working at closed down. They're all pretty much clean. A few had misdemeanors, mostly for drunken disorderly, stuff you'd expect from a bunch of rednecks.
What about Nemo Straight?
Like he told you, grew up on a small horse farm that his father managed. That's how he learned the business. He fought in Vietnam and was a superb soldier. Lots of medals and lots of hard fighting. He spent 3 months as a POW.
One tough dude to be able to survive that. The Kong weren't known for their hospitality.
He did some odd jobs when he got back to the States. Prison guard, computer sales. Along the way, he married, had some kids, started working again with horses, and got divorced. He came to the Canfields just about the time they bought East Winds.
What about old Ernest B. Free?
Not one damn sighting, and that's got me amazed, frankly. Usually we have thousands of phone calls, 99% of them wrong, but usually we get one or two legit leads. This time, nothing. A very frustrated Webb looked around.
His gaze went past the device and then came back to it and was riveted. Damn, he said.
What? What is it, Webb? Said Bates.
Webb pointed. I think maybe we've got another eyewitness of sorts.
Bates looked over at the traffic signal at the corner diagonal from the warehouse loading dock. Like other signals in the area, on top of it was mounted a surveillance camera. And like the other cameras Webb had seen in the area on his last trip through, this one had been pointed in another direction, presumably by mischievous hands, and that direction happened to be right at the loading dock.
Damn, echoed Bates. You thinking what I'm thinking?
Yeah, said Webb. That looks like one of the older models on video loops that run 24 hours a day. The newer ones only activate when they're triggered by the speed of a car and take a still photo of the rear license plate.
Well, let's hope the district police haven't taped over a certain segment.
Bates signaled for one of his men to make that call immediately.
Webb said, I've got to get back to the farm. Romano's probably starting to feel lonely.
I really don't like this, Webb. What if you end up dead between now and then?
You got Cove. He saw it, too.
What if he ends up dead, too? That's just as likely with everything that's been going down.
Got a pen and some paper?
Webb wrote out the entire account of Tuna's murder. Tuna's real name was Charles Towson, Webb had found out from Bates, and no one knew where the nickname had come from. Yet everyone working the street seemed to have one. Well, whoever pulled Charlie Towson's body out of the river, if anyone ever did, was going to lose whatever was in his stomach. Webb positively identified the killer as Francis Big F. Westbrook. He signed it with a flourish, and two other agents witnessed his signature.
Are you kidding me? A defense attorney will tear that apart, raged Bates.
It's the best I can do right now.
Webb walked away. Chapter 37.
When he returned to East Winds, Webb checked in with Romano and then went to the carriage house and eased into a hot bath. A cat nap while he was soaking and he'd be as good as new, he figured. He'd gotten by on a lot less sleep over the years. Romano had seen Webb's fresh wounds and his comment had been predictable.
You let somebody beat the crap out of you again? You're giving HRT a bad name, Webb.
Webb had told him that next time he'd make sure he was beaten in places that didn't show. For the next several days, his and Romano's routine was just that, routine. When Gwen and Billy had seen his injuries from the encounter with Big F, Gwen exclaimed,
My God, are you all right?
Looks like old Boo kicked you in the face, commented Billy as he sucked on an unlit cigarette.
Actually, I would have preferred Boo, replied Webb. Gwen had insisted on putting some medicine on Webb's cuts. Her fingers felt very nice against his skin. As she tended to him, Billy had said,
Never a dull moment for you federal types, I guess.
I guess, replied Webb. He and Romano got to know the Canfields better and saw how much work it took to run a farm. As promised, they both pitched in, although Romano bitched and complained every evening to Webb about it. East Winds was vast and wondrous, and Webb actually started to feel that maybe he should try something else for a living. He figured those feelings would disappear as soon as he left East Winds permanently. Gwen Canfield was an interesting woman, fascinating in many ways, and as intelligent and reserved as she was beautiful and mannered. She and Billy were like the proverbial fire and ice. Webb had ridden with her every day, as much to protect her as to understand the lay of the land better. And he had to admit, there were far worse ways to spend one's time than riding around a beautiful place with a beautiful woman. She had stopped and prayed at the chapel each day, and Webb had sat on Boo and watched her. She never invited him to join her, and he never suggested that he should. The fact that David Canfield had died on his watch was enough reason for him to keep his distance around the woman. Each evening, the FBI agents had gone to the large house and spent time with them. Billy had led a fascinating life and loved to share stories from it. Each time, Nemo Strait had attended, and Webb found he had more in common with the ex-Marine than he would have thought. Strait had done a lot in his life, everything from soldiering to bronco busting.
Live by my brains and my brawn, though I seem to have less of both as time goes by.
We're sort of in the same boat, said Webb. You see yourself doing the horse thing until you drop?
Well, I have to say, I think about the day I walk away from all the manure and ornery animals.
He glanced at the Canfields, lowered his voice, and added, grinning,
I'm talking about the two and four-legged varieties.
In a normal tone, he said,
But like I said, it gets in your blood. Some days I see myself getting my own little spread and running it right.
Nice dream, said Romano. Some days I want to have my own NASCAR team. Webb looked at his partner.
I didn't know that, Paulie. Hey, a guy's got to have some secrets.
You got that right, said Strait.
My ex told me once that she never knew what I was thinking. You know what I told her? I told her that was the difference between men and women. Women tell you exactly what they think of you. Men just hold it in.
He glanced over at Billy Canfield, who was across the large room examining his stuffed grizzly and downing his third beer in the last half hour. Gwen had gone upstairs to check on dinner.
Although sometimes the reverse is true, you know, said Strait.
Webb looked at Canfield and then back at Strait.
Is that right?
What was becoming more apparent also was that Gwen and Billy spent a lot of time apart. Webb never directly asked Gwen about this, but her occasional comments made it seem as though that was more Billy's choice than Gwen's. The blame game over David, perhaps, thought Webb. And despite what Gwen had suggested earlier, it was also clear that Nemo Strait was an integral part of the operation at East Winds. Several times, Webb had seen Billy turn to the foreman for a definitive answer on matters related to the horses or the running of the farm.
"Been doing this since I was a baby," Strait told Webb once. "Ain't much I haven't seen when it comes to horses and farms and such. But Billy, he's picking it up fast."
"And Gwen?"
"She knows more than Billy, but she's sort of set in her ways, too. Been trying to put a soft shoe on Baron because that animal has got some brittle hooves, but she won't have no part of it. I know my horse, she tells me. Stubborn. Probably one of the reasons Billy married her."
"One of them, anyway," said Webb.
Strait sighed. "You got that right. She's a looker. But you know what? Lookers make a man's life miserable. You know why? 'Cause some other guy's always trying to take her away. My ex wouldn't have won no beauty contests on her best day, but hell, I didn't sit around worrying about some other fox in the chicken coop either."
"Billy doesn't seem worried about that."
"Fella's hard to read sometimes, but he's a thinker, all right. A lot going on in that old head of his."
"That one I agree with," replied Webb.
Webb had been in contact with Bates every day, but nothing as yet had come through on the surveillance tape. Early one morning, Webb had just got out of the shower when his phone rang. He reached over and snagged it off the toilet. It was Claire Daniels.
"Have you thought any more about the hypnosis?"
"Look, Claire, I'm on a job."
"Webb, if you really want to make some progress, then I feel hypnosis is the key."
"Nobody's looking around in my head."
She persisted.
"We can start, and if you're uncomfortable in any way, we'll stop. Fair enough?"
"Claire, I'm busy. I can't deal with this right now."
"Webb, you came to me for help. I'm doing my best to help you, but I need your cooperation. Trust me, you've been through a lot worse than anything hypnosis will throw at you."
"Right. Sorry, no sell."
She paused and then said, "Listen, Webb, I met with someone that you might want to know about." He didn't answer.
"Buck Winters? Name ring a bell?"
"What did he want?"
"You signed a release that allowed him to ask me about your treatment. Do you remember doing that?"
"I guess. I signed a lot of papers around that time."
"I'm sure. They really took advantage of you."
"What did he want and what did you tell him?"
"Well, there was a big difference between the two. He tried to make a convincing case for why I should tell him everything, but the release form gave me enough wiggle room to stall him. I'll probably hear about it later, but that's just the way it goes."
He thought about this for a few seconds. "You stuck out your neck for me, Claire. I appreciate that."
"But that's one of the reasons I'm calling you. Winters seemed dead set on nailing you to the wall on what happened. He even used the word traitor."
"That's actually not such a big surprise. Buck and I haven't really seen eye to eye since Waco."
"But if we can get to the root of your issues, Webb, and show him and everyone else very clearly that you're not a traitor, well, I can't see how that would be a bad thing. Can you?"
Webb sighed. He didn't want to wave on this, but Webb also didn't want people to have doubts about him forever. He didn't want to have doubts about his ability to do his job at HRT.
"Do you really think the hypnosis will help?"
"We won't know, Webb, until we try. But I've had great success with hypnosis in other patients."
He finally said, "Okay, maybe we can talk about this some more, face to face."
"Here at my office?"
"I'm on an assignment."
"Can I come to where you are?"
Webb thought about this.
Did he really want to do this?
The smart thing would be to tell Claire Daniels to go to hell and get on with his life. The problem with that was he had never really gotten the help he was now coming to believe he actually needed.
At some point, he would have to pay the piper. And he was coming to understand that Claire really did want to help him. I'll send somebody for you.
Who?
His name's Romano, Paul Romano. He's HRT. Don't tell him anything, okay? Because sometimes he's got a big mouth.
Fine, Webb. Where are you?
You'll see, Doc. You'll see.
I'm free in about an hour. Do you need more time?
That's plenty of time. Webb dried off, dressed, found Romano, and told him what he wanted him to do. Who is the woman? He asked suspiciously. Is this your shrink? They like to be called psychiatrists. I'm not your chauffeur. I'm on a job, Webb.
Polly, come on. I want to check in with Billy and Gwen. And you've been carrying the full load out here. Let me take it for a while. If you leave now, she'll be ready to go by the time you get there.
And what if something goes down while I'm gone?
Then I'll handle it.
And what if you get popped?
What, you worrying about me all of a sudden?
No, I don't want to get my butt in a ringer over it. I got a family to think of.
You mean Angie will kill you?
That's exactly what I mean.
Look, just do it, and I swear to you, I'll be grafted to the Canfield souls until you get back.
Romano didn't look happy about it, but he finally agreed and got Claire's name and address from Webb. But listen up. The real reason I'm doing this is so I can go get my own wheels.
You mean the vet?
Yeah, I mean the vet. I bet Billy would love to see it, him and me being automotive aficionados.
Just go, Polly, before I throw up.
Romano had told him that the Canfields were at the main house, so Webb jogged up there and knocked on the door. An older woman dressed in jeans and a T-shirt and wearing a brightly colored bandana answered the door and escorted him back to the small, sunlit breakfast area off the kitchen where Gwen and Billy were eating. Gwen rose and said,
"Would you like some coffee or something to eat?"
Webb accepted some coffee, eggs, and toast.
Romano and I were patrolling the place the other night and saw some interesting activity going on next door, he said.
Gwen and Billy exchanged glances, and Billy said,
At the Southern Bell? Damn right it's interesting.
So you've seen some things, too.
Billy, said Gwen, you have no proof.
Proof of what? Asked Webb quickly.
Maybe I ain't got any proof, but I got my common sense, said Billy. And the goings-on over there make about as much sense with running a horse farm as me running a convent.
So what have you seen?
You tell me first.
Webb did so, and Billy acknowledged that all of it jived with what he had seen.
See, what gets me, said Billy, are the semis. Now, I was in trucking for 20 years, and you only use those over-the-road rigs to haul some serious cargo long distances.
Have any of the other neighbors complained?
Asked Webb.
He shook his head. I'm by far the closest one they got. The place on the other side, the owners are at their home in Naples or their other one in Nantucket. They just bought the farm so they can ride when they want to. Can you imagine that? Shell out $8 million for 900 acres just so you can ride twice a year? What, the dumb shit's never heard of a stable?
He shook his head and continued.
And the trucks only come and go at night. A little tricky driving those beasts in the dark on these narrow, windy roads. It's not like we have streetlights out here. And there's something else.
Webb perked up.
What's that?
Remember I told you that a company had bought the place?
Right.
Well, a while back, after all the planes and choppers and such, I went over to the courthouse and did a little digging. The company, it's an LLC, by the way, a limited liability company, is owned by two gents from California, Harvey and Giles Ransom. I guess they're brothers, or maybe they're married, you know, being from California and all.
He shook his head.
You know anything about them?
Nope, but you're the detective. Figured you could dig something up fast if you wanted to.
I'll look into it.
I invited them over once I found out their names. Walked right over there and everything.
What happened?
This time their people thanked me real polite-like, but said they weren't in. Said they'd pass along the invite. Yeah, right, and I'm a Chinaman.
Gwen poured herself another cup of coffee. She had on jeans, a light brown pullover sweater, and low-heeled boots. Before returning to her seat, she pinned up her hair and revealed a very long neck that for a few moments Webb found he couldn't take his eyes off of. She sat back down and looked anxiously back and forth at the two men before coming to rest her gaze on Webb.
What do you think it might be, Webb?
I've got my suspicions, but that's all they are.
Billy eyed him keenly as he took a last bite of toast and wiped his mouth with his napkin.
You're thinking it's maybe the mafioso running stolen goods or something. Believe me, that crap went on in the trucking business. If I had a dollar for every Italian come through my door with a suitcase full of money in exchange for hauling their stuff in my trucks, well, I wouldn't need to be working my ass off on this farm.
God, said Gwen, as she pounded the table with her hand. We leave Richmond to get away from murderous white supremacists and move next door to a bunch of criminals.
She stood, went over to the sink, and stared out the window.
Billy said, look here, Gwen, whoever is next to us, it don't matter in our lives, okay? They do their thing and we do ours. If they got something illegal, it's not our problem, because Webb is going to bust them, okay? We're running a horse farm, just like you wanted. Okay?
She turned and looked at him anxiously.
But not what you wanted?
He grinned. Oh, sure. Hell, I even kind of like mucking the stalls. He glanced at Webb for a moment. Pushing manure is sort of therapeutic.
To Webb, the man didn't look like he meant it. Billy looked away and said,
well, look what the cat dragged in.
Webb glanced over at the doorway and saw Nemo Strait standing there, his Stetson in his hands. He was staring at Billy, and his features were a little unkind, it seemed to Webb.
Billy said, you're ready to go?
Yes, sir, just come up to let you know before we hit the road.
They all went outside and down to the main road, where Webb saw a caravan of 10 horse trailers, some bumper pulled, others fifth wheels hooked to heavy-duty trucks, and each emblazoned with the East Winds logo.
Most of those are brand new trailers, said Billy. Cost a damn fortune, because we had to customize some, but I guess you got to look good. At least that's what folks keep telling me. Ain't that right, Nemo?
If you say so, Billy.
Billy pointed to the trailers.
Now those three are custom fab three-horse slant loads.
He continued pointing.
Then we got two Sundowner Pro Stock MPs, a straight-load gooseneck with horse dressing room, a 10-foot Townsman bumper pull with young Bobby Lee all by his lonesome inside, two Sunlight 760s, and that big-ass one over there.
He pointed to the last trailer, an elaborate-looking contraption that resembled more of a people coach than one for horses.
Now that's the little jewel in this group, though it sure ain't little. That's a classic coach Silverado. Living compartment for the boys in front, tack space and other equipment and such in the middle, and then space for two horses in the back. It's a beaut. All self-contained.
Where are they heading?
Asked Webb.
Kentucky, answered Gwen. They have a big yearling sale up there.
She pointed to the trailers.
These are our best yearlings, 19 of them in all.
She sounded a little sad, thought Webb. Maybe for her it was like more children going away.
Billy said, this is what separates the men from the boys. This sale goes well, we have a good year. I normally go too, but the FBI has persuaded me otherwise. He shot a glance at Webb. So if the sales aren't like they should be, I guess you guys can make up the difference.
That's not my call, said Webb.
Billy shook his head. Yeah, I bet. Those bastard buyers pick the horses apart and lowball us. Then we're selling pencils on the sidewalk. Now these yearlings are some of our best ever. But those folks will hem and haw and find every little flaw they can, and then try to buy them for pennies on a dollar. And next thing you know, they got the next secretariat. Well, that's not going to happen. I've been down that road before. You haul their asses back here straight if they don't fetch the reserves I gave you. Screw 'em.
Nemo nodded. Yes, sir.
Webb watched as Gwen went over to one of the smaller trailers and looked inside it.
That's Bobby Lee, said Billy, pointing to the horse inside the trailer Gwen was looking at. Now, if things go right, that horse will bring us a nice little bundle. He's special, so he doesn't have to share his ride with another horse. Damn, wish I had me a deal like that. That's my problem, too many people around.
Webb wondered whom, if anyone, the man was referring to.
How come you don't keep the horses and race them yourself? Asked Webb.
It takes mountains of money to raise and maintain thoroughbreds for racing. That's why the most successful farms are run by corporations and syndicates, primarily. They have lots of capital behind them, so they can weather bad times. We can't compete with that. East Winds is a breeding farm, and that's all we really want to be. Believe me, that's a big enough pain in the ass. Ain't that right, Gwen?
She said nothing and moved away when Webb went over to Bobby Lee and looked inside the townsman 10-foot trailer. The rear windows of the trailer were open, and Webb could see the horse inside, starting with the top of his bushy tail. Straight came over and stood next to him.
Hate to see Bobby Lee go. He's a good horse. 15 hands already. Beautiful chestnut coat. Glossy. Damn impressive musculature. Look at that chest. And he's got a lot of growing left to do.
He is a nice-looking animal.
Webb looked at the heavy-duty equipment boxes welded on the interior walls of the horse trailer.
What are those for?
Straight opened the trailer and went inside, coaxing Bobby Lee over to the side. He opened one of the boxes.
Horses are worse than women when it comes to traveling.
He grinned and stepped aside. Inside the box, Webb saw halters and bridles and blankets and every other piece of equipment a horse might need. Straight ran his hand along the soft rubber that lined the outside of the boxes.
We pad the sides so the horse doesn't hurt itself against the edges.
Not a lot of room for error, Webb said as Straight closed up the box.
There's a lot of little details that might not seem so obvious to non-horse folks. For example, you're riding with a single horse in a two-staller, you gotta keep the animal on the driver's side so the extra weight don't keep pulling you to the side of the road. These trailers are real versatile. All the dividers swing out and you can reconfigure them. Keep a mare in the back and the foal up front, for example.
He tapped the walls.
Galvanial metal, and that lasts a lot longer than people.
He pointed to the long open space directly in front of the horse.
And up here is their feeding and water trough. And over there, he pointed to the door on the side, is the escape hatch if you got to get the horse out fast and don't want to get kicked in the process.
Where's the TV?
Straight laughed. Tell me about it. I wish I traveled half as good as these animals. Although I tell you, with the Silverado over there, we're going to be living in style now. Even got its own toilet and kitchen. So no more porta-potties and fast food for yours truly. Billy really outdid himself with that one, and me and the boys sure appreciate it.
Webb looked at the roof of the trailer. Bobby Lee's head was close to it. Straight was watching him and smiled.
Bobby Lee is a big yearling, and we can't make the roof any higher.
How come?
Give horses enough room, they'll take advantage of it. Hell, I watched one horse that didn't like to be trailered do a backward somersault, if you can believe it, and jump out the rear onto the highway where he got hit by a truck. It wasn't a pretty sight and almost cost me my job. That's why horses are situated facing the front of the trailer, or else they'll try and jump right out. And we got a side access door and side ramp on all the trailers so you can take the horses out front ways if there's an emergency. It's faster, and you try taking a frightened horse out from the back on a highway, you might just get your head handed to you if it decides to kick. See what I mean?
Gotcha.
Yep, they're complicated machines. Sort of like my ex-wife.
Strait laughed again. Webb fanned the air in front of his nose.
Boy, these trailers get pretty ripe.
Ha, said Strait, as he patted Bobby Lee's neck, came back out, and secured the trailer latch.
Just wait until that horse has been in there a few hours, then you'll really smell something. Now, dogs love the smell of horse manure, but humans don't. I guess that's why we're called civilized. That's why we replace the aluminum floors with wooden ones. They drain better. And also why we spread the sawdust on the floors. You just sweep it clean, manure and all. Better than the straw.
They left Bobby Lee and went back over to Billy.
Now, you got all the trailer stickers for state inspection and the horse papers? Asked Billy.
Yes, sir.
Strait looked at Webb.
You cross state lines with a bunch of animals, the police stop you at random, and they ain't gonna let you go one step farther until they check your commercial license and the horse's vet certificates and such. They're worried about spreading equine diseases and such.
And who can blame them? Said Gwen as she rejoined them.
No, ma'am, said Strait. He tipped his hat.
Well, here's to making East Wind some big bucks.
Strait climbed in one of the trucks, and Webb and the Canfields watched as the caravan of trailers started up and passed down the main road and out of East Winds. Webb glanced over at Gwen, who looked very upset. Billy walked back up to the house.
You okay? He asked her. I'm as okay as I'm ever going to be, Webb.
She crossed her arms over her chest and walked off, away from the house. Webb just stood there, looking at husband and wife going their separate ways.